Last week we began talking about kibud av ha'aim for an av or an aim that maybe aren't so good. We've been talking about different situations in which the kibud av ha'aim situation might be at odds with other mitzvos, but we haven't yet discussed just from the standpoint of the parent themselves. We've talked about situational conflict. We've talked about, you know, one mitzvah being better than another mitzvah. We've talked about not listening to a mitzvah when it goes against the Torah. So now we started talking about last week this rush. The tshuva of the rush is very interesting because, well, it's interesting sociologically, but also halachically. Because the tshuva of the rush said that there was a man that that didn't like another person, we don't exactly know what the situation was. You can sort of fill in the gaps with your imagination. And for one reason or another, he tells his son, don't talk to so-and-so. Okay? So now the son is a little more forgiving, maybe because he wasn't in the conflict itself. And the son says to his dad, you know, I really think we should make up. I think we should make amends. We should, you know, get back together. And in the end of the day, he comes to the rush and he says, what am I supposed to do? On the one hand, my father told me not to talk to this person, but on the other hand, how could I not be Oiv Yisrael? Right? Which one should I listen to, my father or Losisna? Now, the truth is that the case is not exactly Losisna Sechicha B'Lavecha, right? It's not exactly don't hate another Jew. You're just not talking to them. So whether that's hate or not, that goes all the way back to the beginning of our discussion when it came to the mitzvah of Tochacha. The Gemara in Erechin starts that whole discussion about how to rebuke somebody by trying to define the beginning of the Pasuk, which is Losisna Sechicha B'Lavecha, don't hate another person. So we went through, if you remember, three or four different possibilities of how to understand the first part of the pasuk relative to the second part of the pasuk. Right? What did it just mean? Don't harbor feelings inside, but you can say them outside. Didn't it mean you're allowed to say them? You're not allowed to use your hands. Did it say? Was it just sort of, you know, a description of things, but not really an Isser per se, and it was really just an introduction to Ochiach to Ochiach, and the Gemara that seems to be included or not related or not related to Ochiach to Ochiach. But here we're talking about, at least according to the Rush, presumably an Isser Daraisa, right? That's how the Rush at least, you know, takes it, that's how the Rush interprets it, and therefore he gives the following answer, which we talked about last week, just reviewing here. Aser lisno l'shum Yehudi im lo she'yareihu over avera. The only time you're allowed to hate another Jew is if he's expressly showing you that he is an over avera. Now, what exactly does that mean? Does that apply today? The Rush doesn't really go through that aspect of it. It's really a completely different topic about whether you're allowed to hate other people that do averas, and are they doing it presumably lahachis, are they doing it just because they're irreligious? Presumably they're not just irreligious, and that doesn't give you the license to just hate them. But rather here, presumably the way that the Rush is interpreting the question, which is not, at least from the literal question, doesn't say it, but the way the Rush is interpreting the question is, ha'av shetziva lisno lo. The father commands the child to hate this person. So then says the Rush, Lav kol kamine, you do not believe him. Letzavos olav or al divrei Torah, you're not supposed to side with him, which when it comes to something that goes against the Torah. Shenemar ani Hashem, I am Hashem. Mora'i lemala mimora'achem. That the fear of me, of Hashem's word, is greater than the fear of this person's word, or your word, meaning the people. Ve'od, so says the Rush, option number one, answer number one that we talked about last week, is that when it comes to the battle, the conflict, the tug of war between kibud av ha'aim and Hashem, so Hashem always wins, as you would probably assume. Hashem wins in that battle and that conflict, and therefore, this is a calculus. We are trying to crunch the numbers. Which one's more important? And we say, at least according to the first answer, the Rush, Hashem. Hashem wins this battle, he wins the tug of war, and therefore you listen to the pasuk, Losista Sehicha Bilvavecha, instead of listening to Kibud Av V'Em. However, then the Rush adds another comment. The Rush then says, and this is where it gets interesting. I mean, it was interesting before too, but this is where it gets complicated, which is why it gets interesting. The Ode, Lo Haya Ha'av Bizeh Hadavar Ose Ma'ase Amcha Ve'eino Tzarech Lechabdo. In this regard, that's a very important phrase when the Rush says that. In this regard, Bizeh Hadavar, with this specific thing, Lo Haya Ha'av Bizeh Hadavar Ose Ma'ase Amcha. He's not within the definition of being Jewish. In regards to Losisna Sechicha Bilvavecha, in regards to this mitzvah, this person is not Jewish enough to be considered even within the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em. Meaning, as opposed to the first answer, which was a calculus, which was more important, Kibud Av V'Em or Hashem? And we said Hashem is more important, as you would assume, but at least there's a calculus. Says the Rush here, there's no calculation. There's no analysis. There's no weighing two things against each other. There's no tug of war. This person is not within the realm of Osem Asa Amcha, meaning Eino Tzarech Lechabdo. There is no obligation whatsoever for Kibud Av V'Em. It's not that Kibud Hashem beats out Kibud Av V'Em. It's that there is no Kibud Av V'Em. And that's a very different logic. Because what that's going to, that what that indicates to us is that there is a threshold. There is a threshold for the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em. There's a point in which if your parent is no longer of a certain religious observance, you do not have to listen to their instructions. You do not have the obligation of Kibud Av V'Em. Yeah,
Batya. But is it just Bezeh HaDavar in this good instance, in this, about this thing, or in general? You don't have to give him this.
Right. Code. So point number one is that there is a threshold. Point number two is that there can be many distinct thresholds, and it depends in which area. And this is fascinating because who's going to determine what's what, right? Let's say you have, I think of the most extreme example. I'm not going to talk about extreme examples, but you can think of extreme examples. You have a person who sins in a very particular way. They are, tax evaders. Right? They steal from people. So let's say that's their sin. So your father now asks you for a drink of water. That has nothing to do with taxes. That has nothing to do with money. So is that to me, and according to this Rush, according to what Batya is implying, according to Batya, does that mean that this person still is within the realm of Kibud Av V'Em for other activities? Or is there some kind of threshold which completely negates them from the mitzvah entirely? Right? So it's a very interesting nuance from the Rush. The Rush says, Bezeh HaDavar. Bezeh HaDavar. Since when do we define a person's applicability to a mitzvah in such individualized circumstances? He's within the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em for this, but he's not within the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em for that. People ask me, every so often, people come up, it comes up in conversation. I'm a big, and I'm sure many of you are also, just by nature of being Jewish, I'm big into Shlomo Carlebach. Just the songs and the rhythms, they're very simple, they're very easy to connect to and relate to. Many of them are very inspiring. And there's a lot of press, negative press about Shlomo Carlebach behind the scenes. I don't know if people are aware of this. Not for us to really talk about at length, because it's not nice to talk about in general. But the question people often ask me is, when I get into these conversations, is how are we supposed to look at that? What are we supposed to do with all of his music? What are we supposed to do with all of his contributions? All of the good that he did in his life? And it's, first of all, it's not an easy answer, right? So anyone who tells you, oh, it's easy, just do this. So that's, I know shuls that won't sing any of his songs. I know multiple shuls that don't sing any of his tunes. And I've been at shul that if the chazan does sing the tune, they'll let the chazan sing by himself, and the rabbi won't sing. I've been to shuls like that. I've also, You know, I've also been to shuls where they won't sing Vayehi Bnei Aharon because apparently it was composed by a conservative Jew. I didn't know that. But when I started singing and it was a solo, I was wondering why, and that's why. But at the same time, they're singing Shlomo Carlebach songs. So where this is almost exactly the, or a very related question, which is, where do we draw the line? Is there a way to sort of dissociate the person from their art? Is there a way for a person to dissociate the person as a whole from their specific activity? It would sound from the Rush, and this is not the same exact thing as Shlomo Carlebach. I'm just bringing that up as another interesting example as to when do we sort of compartmentalize different aspects of people's life. This father, Bezeh HaDavar, you're not chayv to be mechayv him. It's a very interesting claim. It's a very interesting two words. We didn't pick up on it because it gets into this, a larger debate. But yeah, Dina?
I have a lot of trouble with, I don't know if it's really saying specifically you're not considered Jewish.
Not that you're not Jewish, but
You're not Jewish.
Sort of, yeah.
Like that.
Yeah, sort of. You're not behaving Jewishly. It's a specific phrase, and it's based on a pasuk, so I can't really translate it. But when the Rush says, lo hayav v'zeh hadavar oseh maaseh amcha, it's really a drasha from a pasuk, actually from a different mitzvah. Oseh maaseh amcha, which doesn't really apply. It doesn't, that same pasuk, that same drasha is not by Kibud Avim, but it's a general concept that the person is not within the realm of the mitzvah. But the only problem is, he says it bezeh hadavar. Nowhere else have I ever seen, at least, that this concept of oseh maaseh amcha is individualized for a specific mitzvah. It's usually you're either oseh maaseh amcha, you are a Jewish behavior, or you are not a Jewish behavior, right? So I've never seen it, compartmentalized in this way. But yes, it does seem like, as Bacha said, it is specific to this Kibud Avim. Yeah, Viva.
So if we were to say that he's out of category of Amcha, and we're not obligated in Kibud Avim at all, so that is really judging the father, and that's like he's the child might also be guilty that way of los tisna or something like that, because he's.
You mean in a different context or in the same situation?
In the situation, well, if it's a blanket decision, I don't have to listen to my father because he's telling me something against the Torah, against the mitzvahs, then this is taking something on oneself that's bigger than just, in this case, is it between Hashem and Kibud Avim? This is like passing judgmental character and on the status of the father.
Yeah, so I think I see where you're going. This is definitely more extreme than we've seen in the past weeks. In the past weeks, what we've talked about is when the father makes a very specific request, which is against the Torah, right? He tells his son to go into a cemetery to get a lost item, and the son is a Kohen, right? But that's not to say that the situation over there wasn't the case, that father was a rampant cemetery goer, right? That's just to say that he gave an instruction which would be against the Torah. This is different. This father is actively violating a principle in the Torah, and he's asking his child to do the same thing. So I don't think that the Rush is saying that by the father's instruction, he's Eino Oseh Maaseh Amcha. I think it's that through the father's example, he's not Oseh Maaseh Amcha. Meaning he has excluded himself from that category by his own behavior. That's different from what we saw in previous weeks. Is that what you're getting at in terms of how harsh we're being to the father?
Sort of. He's removed himself from this category in this instance, and we don't know, this might be a very strong emotional issue for the father.
Sure.
And that's why he's doing this, but he's not saying don't listen to the Torah at all. He's just saying, like,
right.
In this case, with this specific.
Right, and that's the complication that the Rush is introducing here, right? And this is what we're, you know, hopefully going to get through, which is, where is the line? Is there an individualized line that within every mitzvah we have to look at if our father is a trustworthy person? Or is there a line which is general and sort of going to define the father in one way or another? Right? Generally, for every mitzvah. So if we hear from the Rush, it sounds like we're treating every single mitzvah individually. Right? Just by the words, Bezeh HaDavar.
His own judgment influences him or motivates him, and so do we say he's not deserving of kibud av va'em, or just that we say when it in an instance where it is in direct opposition to a mitzvah, like otherwise.
Okay.
Has removed himself completely from the category.
Okay, so that's an interesting distinction. And my inclination is to say, although we haven't really talked about this, we'll probably get to this sort of at our tail ends, you know, our concluding classes when we go through tshuvas and things like that. What do you do with an irreligious parent? My inclination is to say that this is not the same thing as an irreligious parent. Because at least the way that the Rush is saying it, right, if you look at the beginning of the Rush, right, where that bays is, where the bed is, the answer. Da she'asr lisno l'shum Yehudi im lo she'yareyu over avera. Now, he's not talking about the same person here. He's talking about whether you're allowed to hate somebody. But you notice how he says she'yareyu over avera. There has to be some kind of expression that he wants to be an over avera. Meaning, there's a rebelliousness that has to come with it. Now, he's not talking about the same thing, so it's not necessarily the same thing in the way that the Rush is saying it. But I do believe that that's what the Rush means when he says here that lo hayaha av bezeha davar osamasa amcha, meaning he is actively, consciously, and deliberately going against the Torah. It's not like he was raised to hate Jews, right? This is not something like he was just, you know, brought up in that way and he doesn't know any better and it's the environment he was brought up in. No, he has a deliberate decision that he has made to hate this person. And in that situation where you're deliberately going against the Torah, that's when you're not osama sa'amcha. Now, could you read into the Rush that anyone who doesn't do mitzvahs is also included or excluded from the mitzvah kibud av va'em? You could also read that in. I don't think necessarily that's what the Rush is saying. And we'll have to save that for a later date, or maybe we'll come to it a little bit today. But what we're talking about, at the very least, and I would think most accurately talking about here, is a person who's deliberately and expressly rebelling against the Torah. Right? So I'm not necessarily saying, I don't necessarily think that we can extend this to an irreligious Jew, at least based on this Rush.
Oh, so, like, just one more.
Yeah, Viva.
The father is just so strongly incensed, and this is what brings him to this. If it were anybody else, then one would think, well, hocheach tochiach, let him know that he's this is wrong, that he's
okay.
Not supposed to act in this way.
Yeah.
So that may be. At that point he would relent, but that's not part of the equation here, I guess.
Well, not right now. I mean, the Rush is being asked a very specific question. And
yeah.
You and I and all of us here are very loving and sensitive people, and we're trying to understand who this person is, but we just don't have enough information, right? We don't have all the data. The Rush was asked a very specific question in a vacuum. You know, granted, it's in a vacuum. And the Rush in that vacuum is answering the question, right? So might he have other things going on? Very possibly. Might this person have done something legitimately wrong to him? Very possibly. But the way that the Rush is answering it is basically, all else being equal, there's no justification to hate another Jew based on the instruction of your father, right? That's all he's saying. We don't know what the real situation is. And remember back then, you know, it's not like this guy is the Rush's neighbor and they're having a conversation about it. This is a letter that was sent to the Rush from across the country, by snail mail. And when I say snail mail, I mean snail mail, literally took months to get to him. And now he's finally opening the letter. He's like, he wishes he could just pick up the phone and say, well, what is your dad going through? Does he have, was he having a bad day that day? Has the situation changed? What the other guy, he doesn't have that availability, right? So we don't know the context. Neither does the Rush. In a vacuum, this is what the Rush is saying. And for our purposes, we're not really interested as much in terms of the tshuva as we are in terms of the halakhic concept. That there is a concept within the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em that a parent could be excluded from the entirety of the mitzvah based on their own activities, based on their own actions. And this is a chiddush. We hadn't yet seen this. We've seen in previous weeks that if a parent says, do this or do that, or don't do this, don't do that, and it has particularly, it's particularly contradictory to other mitzvahs in the Torah, so then you listen to the Torah instead. Here is different. Here is a situation where a person is doing something on them by themselves, which completely excludes them from the mitzvah entirely. That we hadn't seen before. Meaning it doesn't matter what they say. It's not about this instruction or that instruction. Even if the parent would say, bring me a glass of water, if they are not osa ma'ase amcha, if they're not, I should say it like this to cover my basis here, if they are actively rebelling against the Torah, if they are actively, saying that you don't have to keep the Torah in their own personal life, so then even if they just ask you for water, you do not have to give them water, right? There is such a concept. That's what we see here from the Rush, even though the Rush uses it in a very specific situation. By this Zeha Davar, he's not Osa Ma'asa Amcha. Presumably, that category exists, that there is such a person who is so far off the register that we don't have to listen to them at all. That's what the Rush introduces to us. And this is really coming, as we said last week, it's coming from a few different Gemaras. We mentioned the Gemara last week of Shmuel that said to Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda had said something to his father in terms of the halachic discussion in the Gemara in Kedushin Dal Amud Beis, and he says to him, Shinina, you big-toothed one, you got a big mouth, Lo tem leila avuchachi, don't talk to your father like that. Rather, you should say, right, as we said last week, Ella, at the end of the source, Ella, at the end of the source number two, Omer lo, Abba, mikra kasuv Torah kach. There's a pasuk in the Torah like this. Don't say, Dad, how could you do that? Don't say, don't you know there's a pasuk. Just say, there's a pasuk that says like this. If it's relevant, it's relevant. Says Rashi, lo temel avuchachi, source number three, lo dio pit'om shu Torah. Don't say it suddenly. Interesting word in Rashi. Don't say it so suddenly that he's making a mistake. To kamarle lo titniyahachi. Okay, different phrase that we saw last week. Kach kasvesorat seuri kamitzarle. Varehu kaomer lo avartal divrei Torah. If you specifically respond to his activities and say, this is what the Torah says, so then that's basically telling him that he's done an avera. However, you can say mikra kasuv b'torah kach va'omer lo hamikra k'moshe hu kasuv v'huatzmo yavin et shita. All you do is quote a pasuk. That's all you have to do. Interesting. Last week, in between Mincha Maariv, we're talking about the bracha of l'amal shinim. Right, we're going through davening. We've been working on it for a year and a half now, but we're on the bracha of l'amal shinim. And in the process of that bracha, we talked about the Gemara, which says that it was established by a person named Shmuel HaKatan. Shmuel HaKatan was someone who was very well praised amongst the other Tanaim. And the question is, why was he the one, and the Gemara says or implies that he was the one that wrote the bracha of Olam Al Shinim. Olam Al Shinim being the one that's against all of the heretics, right? A very interesting bracha. Historically, when was it created? Why was it added? How does it affect other brachas? Fine. But we ask the question, why Shmuel HaKatan? And the Mishnah in Avos tells us that Shmuel HaKatan used to say, right? The Pirkei Avos is all about different Tanayim and what their catchphrases used to be, right? He used to say like this, right? This was his motto. So what was Shmuel HaKatan's motto? Benfol oivecha al tismach. That was his motto. Wait a second. That's his motto. That's plagiarism. That is a direct and explicit pasuk in Mishlei. How could you say that Shmuel HaKatan's motto was a pasuk? It's a pasuk. That's not his phrase. That's Shlomo HaMelech's phrase. So what does that mean that Shlomo HaKatan used to say, "Bin fol evecha al tismach," and at the failings of your enemies, you should not be joyful? But that's not his phrase. That's Shlomo HaMelech's phrase. So rather, what it means is that he lived by that phrase, right? That's what Pirkei Avos means. It doesn't mean that they would put that on their business card. It means that that's how they lived, right? They lived with that idea. So too here, when it says that the son shouldn't talk, the son should not say anything in his own words. Don't paraphrase the Torah. Don't say, don't you know the Torah says such and such? Says Rashi, Omer lo hamikra kmo shu kasef. Just pull off a chumash from the shelf and read the pasuk. Don't say anything else besides the pasuk. Because as opposed to Shmuel HaKatan, we don't want any of this to be part of your own behavior, part of your own judgment, part of your own accusation. Just say the pasuk. We want you to plagiarize. In this case, just say the pasuk. And hopefully through saying the pasuk, the father will get the message. That's the differentiation between answer number one and answer number two in the Gemara. Don't say, Abba kach kasuv haTorah. Don't say, you know, don't say, hey dad, the Torah says don't light a fire on Shabbos. Say, just say, the Pasuk says, lo sevaru esh b'chomosh v'oseichem. Right? Quoting it from the Chumash. But don't say, you know, dad, don't you know the Torah tells us this, this, and that? But rather quote it directly from the Pasuk. So that's how Rashi understands. This is how we pass on the halacha. If you look at the Gemara, the Shulchan Aruch, and Yoredeah, Reish Mem, Yud Aleph, source number four, Ra'aviv Sha'avar al Divrei Torah, if you find your father violated a principle in the Torah, Lo Yomar Lo Avart al Divrei Torah. Don't say you violated the Torah. El Yomar Lo Abba, Kasuv Torah Kach V'Kach, Kiilu Hushom Imenu, says the Zerav Yosef Karo, say it as if you are asking a question, meaning, Abba, Kasuv Torah Kach V'Kach, does it say in the Torah anywhere about not lighting fires on Shabbos? Dad, do you happen to know, right? Give him, you know, put the power in his hands. You know, tell him that he's in control, and then he can sort of, he can educate. It's a teaching moment. V'lo k'mas hiro, not like you're accusing him, but rather that you want to learn from him. He'll learn it himself, and he will not get embarrassed. Okay. This is all very nice, but it doesn't get to the core of our question, which is, when does it cross over, right? Your father does something wrong. You're allowed to at least reveal to him that what he did wrong is wrong. But that doesn't presumably take him out of the concept of Osa Ma'aseh Amcha, right? He flipped the light switch on Shabbos. Does that mean that now I don't have to listen to my father anymore, right? Does that mean that he's not Osa Ma'aseh Amcha? So, if that was the case, you'd be presumably allowed to speak to him much more harshly. The fact that you have to do it in such a careful way sounds to me, that really the issue of Kibud Av V'Em is still on the table. You still have the obligation to be mechabed your father. You have to do so in a very slight and sensitive way, so that you don't embarrass him, so that you do not violate Kibud Av V'Em. But why? Didn't the Rush just tell us that if a person violates the Torah, that they are violates in specific mitzvah, are they not also excluded, like this father in that case? Are they not also excluded from Osa Ma'aseh Amcha? And therefore, you should not be obligated to give him any respect. He just violated the Torah. Yeah, Viva.
I'm confused. With the Rush, mm-hmm. Wasn't the case where the father is telling the son to do something wrong, and so mm-hmm. the son doesn't listen to him?
But why not?
Why not? Because he's removed him, because the father, in this case, is telling him to do an Avera.
Whoa, no. So that was the distinction that we just said. It's not because of the instruction. It's because of how he acted, right?
Because of how the father acted.
Yeah. Not because of the instruction.
No. I thought the question was does he listen to his father, or does he...
Yeah, that is the question, but why doesn't he have to listen to him? It's not because the father told him to violate the Torah. That was answer number one. Answer number one of the Rush was, you don't have to listen to him, because if it's me versus your father, if it's Hashem versus the father, you listen to Hashem. Answer number two was not because of anything the father said, but it's because of what the father did. The father himself is Enom Osemasa Amcha. He's not acting in accordance to the Torah. And when the father doesn't act in accordance to the Torah, you don't have to listen to him in that regard.
But in that instance, mm-hmm. Does that extend to bring him a glass of water?
No. That would not. Presumably that would not. But in terms of the second case of the Gemara, what I'm saying is that this father violated the Isser of Shabbos. Whatever it is, I'm just giving you an example, right? Your father violated a specific Isser. So the question is, how do you have to admonish him in regards to that Isser? Well, presumably, this is similar to the Rush's case, I would think. The father has violated a principle in the Torah, and the question is, how do you have to talk to him about it? Well, if he just violated it, is that not the same case where you don't have to respect him? You don't have to be so sensitive to him. Right, he's also not osamasa amcha in that regard. Now you could say that there are differentiate. You could add elements to the whole story. You could add elements in the fact that maybe he didn't know, and you're telling him, and now he's first becoming aware of it. There are different ways of saying it. Yeah, Viva.
And also, he's not telling you to do it.
Okay, yeah, but right. So that gets back to the same point, which is, why don't you have to listen to the father in the first case? It wasn't because he told you, according to the Rush. It was because he is not Osamasa Amcha, right? He's the one that's hating the other Jew. Now, even if, you know, the father, you know, it's hard to say because you can't divorce the question from the act because of the words B'zeh HaDavar. But let's say. It's impossible. In that case, it's impossible for me to concoct a situation. But, I think it's irrelevant whether or not my connection from the Gemara to this back to the Rush. I don't think is as important as bringing home the point that there seems to be from the Gemara and Kiddushin a less harsh application. Meaning the Gemara in Kiddushin seems to say that even though your father has violated the Torah, you do not have any license to also therefore violate Kibud Av V'Aim. You still have to be mechaved your parents, even though they violated the Torah. Right? That's really the point of the Kiddushin. How it applies, how it differentiates from the Rush. We could talk all day about it. Yeah, Batya.
So maybe in the case of the Rush originally, we're not making a lot of headway. Wouldn't the person be more obligated to bring up a pasuk that you're not allowed to hate a fellow Jew rather than just, I'm not...
Oh, so maybe?
You're violating... Right. I mean, wouldn't he have to assume that the father is maybe not aware that you're not allowed to hate someone? I don't know.
Yeah. You could apply that type of thing. You could say, why doesn't the Gemara and Kiddushin apply to the case of the Rush? That probably gets back to what we talked about with Aviva before, which is, this is all in a vacuum, right? We don't really know what the context is. We don't know what the situation is. If the father really doesn't know that it's, their father doesn't know that it's usher to hate another person, that's a hard case to make. But yeah, you could ask that question. I'm not sure anyone does, but, but that's probably relevant if that were the situation, if the father really didn't know. We're assuming that the father's situation was that he is actively violating the Torah, deliberately, consciously rebelling against the Torah. So, yeah, it could be relevant, we just don't know. But in the end of the day, we have this Gemara and Kiddushin, which says, even though your father violated the Torah, you still have to be mechabit him. You still have to honor him and speak to him sensitively. You should not embarrass them within the midst of Kibud Av V'Aim. So now that brings us to another Gemara. The Gemara tells us in source number 5, this is a Gemara in Baba Kama, that a person has to, does a person have to bring back, this is the source of the Rush. This is the source of the Rush, so that a person who is in violation of the Torah does not have to, you do not have to honor them. Now, there are a lot of sort of contextual pieces of information here, as opposed to the rush. This, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, has what to do with... let me try to remember here. Yeah, I think it has to do with children who have to return stolen items. And do they have to do that for their father's sake? Do they have to pay for their father's misdeeds? Stuff like that. So the Gemara says, is it because they are obligated to return? Is it because of kivud avim that they're obligated to return the money? Ikri kan v'nasi be'amcha lo ta'or. That a ruler in your nation you do not curse, ba'osa ma'asa amcha. But that's only if he's in your nation, right? V'nasi be'amcha lo ta'or. You can't curse a leader when he's in your nation. But ba'osa ma'asa amcha ki de'amr of Pinchas b'sha'asa tshuva. That's in a case. Oh, sorry. That's the end of the question, I believe. Yeah. So I don't remember 100% of the 100% of the context, but I believe the context of the Gemara is the children are responsible to return lost items that their father stole. So do they have to do that? So the Gemara says, is it really true that they have to do so? That they have to give back the stolen items because of kibud av v'aim? Why would that be the case? Doesn't the pasuk say v'nasi ba'amcha lo ta'or, meaning if there's a leader who's in your nation, you're not allowed to curse them. So similarly, just like you have a leader who you'd be allowed to curse if they weren't be'amcha, right? That's what the pasuk says, be'amcha, shmos chafes chafzal, I believe that's in Mishpatim. But if that were really true, that the condition of being not cursed is to be within the nation, meaning shomer, Torah, and mitzvos, so then also by a father, who is, I guess, a quasi-leader fielder. Why? How exactly you get from one to the other, I'm not 100% sure. As I said before, this drush is said about a nasi. It's not talking about a father, but the Gemara uses it to talk about fathers too. That therefore, the children should not be chayiv to give it back. Why? Because their father was a thief, and he was a robber. And if you're somebody who's a thief and a criminal, so then you're not obligated to give kibud av v'aim. That's what the Gemara implies. He's not osem asa amcha. So the Gemara says, no, kida amr of Pinchas, why would the children have to give it back and still do kibud av v'aim? Bisha asa tshuva. Hachanami bisha asa tshuva. So it's because the father was a baal tshuva. I'm not 100% sure where the hachanami here goes, but either way. That was the situation. So bai gabei. My ba'igabe. What is it that he had to give back, right? If let's say the father was a thief, he was a criminal, right? And now the question is, do the children have to make up for all the stolen items the father took? So at first the Gemara says, no, they don't have to because he's not deserving of their kavod. He's not deserving of the honor because he's a thief. He's a criminal. They're not chayiv in kibud av v'aim for a criminal. So the Gemara says, no, he did tshuva. So the Gemara says, wait a second. If he did tshuva, so then what does he have to return? What does tshuva mean? Tshuva means that you righted your wrongs. And if this guy's a criminal and he stole from people, so then in order to right his wrongs to do tshuva, he must have had to give back all the stuff that he stole. That's how you do tshuva if you're a criminal. So, interesting Shlomo Carlebach story about criminals, but let's not go there for now. Either way, he wanted to give them back, and he had that thought of tshuva. He was in the process of giving it back, but he died before he could actually do it. So the Gemara says, Tashima hagazlanim umalave beribis afa bishagavu machzirin. That's actually a separate topic. I'm not sure how it got into the source sheet. But either way, so the Gemara says the children have to give it back because the father is deserving of their respect. Now, the truth is there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, a very interesting Gemara, And I'm not sure how it really works with this. But the Gemara says, the Gemara is talking about a few different places in the Gemara, and it's not on the source sheet, but maybe you'd find this interesting. The Gemara talks about how you stone a person. Does anybody know how to stone a person? In halacha, halachic...
Keep laying on stones on a person's body.
So that's how they do it in the Arab world. But the question is, how do they do it
in... how they did it in the Jewish world, too.
How do they...
Push off a cliff first.
Okay, so there's something even before that. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says, you get the guy who's deserving the death penalty, which itself only happened once in 70 years. You get him very, very drunk so that he doesn't know what's going on or that he doesn't have the same feeling of pain. And you bring him to a cliff and you throw him off a cliff and hopefully he dies by that. If he doesn't die in his drunken stupor from falling off a cliff, so then you take one huge boulder and you throw it on top of him. And only after that, if that doesn't work, then people throw stones at him. That's why it's called stoning, because of the final process that might come to be. It's very gruesome, and hopefully it never happens, but, for a number of reasons, but the Gemara is talking about, if I'm not mistaken, it's talking about the height of the cliff. How tall should the cliff be? And part of the discussion, if I recall, and this comes up by other, you know, chiyuve misa, other types of killings also, we want to make it as instantaneous as possible. And the question is, why? This guy's a criminal. Why is he deserving of an instant death? He should be a long, arduous, difficult death. He was a criminal. So the Gemara says, no, it's not true. Because, v'yahavta l'reacha kamocha. Whoa, what a chiddush. You have to love your neighbor like you love yourself. And therefore, this criminal has to be treated nicely, even in his death. Wait a second, even in his death? The guy is a criminal. That's why he's being put to death. Why would we apply the mitzvah of Yehavta L'Reyacha Kamoch to somebody who is not L'Reyacha? He's not Reyacha B'mitzvos. He's not your fellow Jew. He's a fellow, you know, rebellious Jew. That he's going against the Torah, just like this father in this case. Not saying that the father is Chayav Misa, but my point is that the same thing should apply. The same kind of logic should apply. And the poskim and the achronim talk about this. Why do we apply the mitzvah of Yehavta L'Reyacha Kamoch to someone who is actively violating the Torah? Presumably, he's not within the mitzvah. And the achronim answer, similar to the way this Gemara says or implies, which is the fact that he's about to die is itself an atonement. He's done his tshuva by standing at the edge of that cliff and being destined to death. He has basically done tshuva. That is his kapara, even at the last instant of death. And therefore, when we actually invoke that death, we have to make sure that it's done. V'yahavta L'Reyacha Kamocha. So to this person who is, you know, who is trying to right his wrongs at the end of his life, so he didn't have the opportunity to actually return the money, but his intention was to do so, and therefore you're still chayev in kibud avim. That's just a little bit of a parallel for you. Not that you were asking for it, but an interesting situation which is similar to this, but in a more gruesome and more dramatic way. But the main thing that comes out of this Gemara is, there is, as we see from the Rush, and as we've now reiterated in a more general sense, there is presumably an exclusion from Kibud Av V'Eim if the parent is not Oseh Ma'aseh Amcha, if he is not somebody who actually keeps the mitzvos. So says Rashi in source number 6, what does that mean? Ba'Oseh Ma'aseh Amcha, v'zeh lo Oseh Ma'aseh Amo, v'einan chayavim v'chvodo. You are not obligated because he is not doing the acts of the people. Now, let's throw in the wrench. We should just call wrenches Rambams, because that's what the Rambam does. The Rambam throws in all the wrenches. So let's see the Rambam in source number 7. Hamamzer chayiv bichvod aviv. Wow, what a way to start a halacha. What does that mean? Hamamzer chayiv bichvod aviv umora'o. What does that mean? Why would you think he wouldn't?
Because of the circumstances of his birth, I guess.
Yeah, he was born from sin. This person came into the world by sin. Now, the truth is, it's not his fault, right? This person, you know, didn't choose to be born into this situation. And the truth is that if the person, you know, makes a lot of his life, so then he actually gets kavod. I was once standing at the Kotel. There's a Gemara in Horios, which is, you have to really understand the Gemara to get this joke. But I think you'll understand the joke when I say it, which is, I was once standing at the Kotel, and you know how the Kotel is. It's sort of like a free-for-all. Maybe you don't know what it's like on the men's side, but it's a free-for-all. You know, minion, we need a tenth, we need a tenth. You know, everyone's asking for a minion at all times during the day. Literally, I once came home late from something. I don't know what it was. And I hadn't davened Maariv, but it was like 1 o'clock in the morning. And no shul is open at 1 o'clock in the morning. So I said, I have to daven minion. So I went down to the Kotel. And sure enough, there were people asking to make a minion at 1 o'clock. It took me less than 2 minutes to get a minion together. And we had minion at 1:30, whatever it was, in the morning. So the same thing happens with laning. Let's say it's a Monday or a Thursday and people are trying to lane. So someone just gets a Torah. I don't know who runs all these minyanim, but someone picks up a Torah, puts it on the bima and says, okay, who's a Kohen? Do we have a Kohen Kohen? And someone from the crowd screams out, is there a Mamzer Talmud Chacham around? Because the Mishnah in Horio says that a Mamzer Talmud Chacham gets the first Aliyah before a Kohen. Now, we don't paskin like that anymore just for practical reasons, not just because of embarrassment. But mamzerim don't necessarily have, it's not all bad for a mamzerim. I don't know why we give them such a name, or colloquially why it's used in such pejorative terms, I guess. But either way,
it could be an issue that he really can't officially call his father.
That's interesting. Well, I guess that would be contextual. It depends on the situation, right? So for instance, let's say they had relations before they were married, and then they got divorced from their previous marriages, and then they got married, but this child was born from their relations, which happened while they were still married, right? You can concoct the case. But yeah, let's just say that they are living with the parents. Are they chai b'chvod aviv v'mora'o? So he says, yes. And then the Rambam says, and maybe you would think not because he came from this relationship, Kamash Malan, he is Chayev, Af Alpi, even though Shu Pater Amakasa Vikilaso, Achiasa Chuva. The child, and this is very interesting because what it implies, but he's going to say it more explicitly in the next line. But either way, so says the Rambam, really, if he would hit his father or curse his father, he would not be Chayev for that. Until the father does tshuva. And I don't know how exactly you do tshuva for having that relationship. But until he repents, you are allowed to hurt your father. Kind of a sort of, at least he's not that you should, not you're encouraged to, but you'd be putter if you did. Right? You wouldn't be penalized for doing so. Whatever that means in very, structured terms. But either way, says the Rambam, the next line, Afilu haya aviv rasha, even if he was wicked, Ubal Averos, and he was a violator of all sins you could think of. Mechabdo umisyare mimenu. You still have to honor him and fear him. And, says the Rambam, in the same breath, the Rambam says, Ra'ahu over al divrei Torah, if you see him, not a new, different father, you see the same guy, Ra'ahu over al divrei Torah, if you see him violating the Torah, Lo yomer lo abba avart al divrei Torah, don't say you violated the Torah, Ella, yomer lo abba kasa b'torah kach v'kach, kilu hushomi men of lochem asiro. Just as the Shulchan Aruch says it, although Shulchan Aruch leaves out the first line, right? The Shulchan Aruch doesn't say the first line, where it talks about being a Baal of Eros, but it says the second line, as we saw before in source number four, that you have to be very sensitive with your father when he does something against the Torah. Make sure you're only strictly quoting the Pasuk. What does it sound like from the Rambam? There is no such exclusion. There's no exception to the rule. Your father and your mother are your father and your mother no matter what they do. They could be the worst people in the world. You're still chayiv lechabdo. Rasha, ubal averos, mechabdo misyari menu. What is the obvious question that the Rambam has to answer, but that he doesn't because he's not a commentary, but rather just a halachicist? What about the Gemara in Bava Kama? We just saw the explicit Gemara that says the children would not have to return the items to their father or on behalf of their father unless he had done tshuva. Unless he did tshuva. Right? That was the Gemara. The Gemara said that the children would not have to make amends with whoever the father stole from. The only reason that they are here is kisha'as b'sha'asa tshuva. Because he did tshuva. Rambam, you didn't mention them doing tshuva when you said he was a Rasha and a Baal of Eros. He's just a Rasha and a Baal of Eros. He's just a bad person. And nonetheless, the Rambam says explicitly in no unclear terms, Mechab de omisyari menu. So how exactly are we supposed to understand the Rambam? The Rambam seems to be explicitly contradicting the Gemara. This, Emir Tzashem, is what we will get to next week in trying to understand this. Suffice it to say, the Rambam is of the minority in this opinion. Although it's interesting to note that the Rambam is taken from for the sake of the language of the Shulchan Aruch, but just not the first part. Right, the Shulchan Aruch that we saw in source number 4 is almost a literal copy and paste from the second line. Right, Ra'ohu over al Divrei Torah. Right, if you look at source number 4 from the word Ra'ahu, he saw him. So if you look at source number 4, what does it say? Ra'a Aviv Sha'avra al Divrei Torah, meaning they separated the narrative from what the Rambam started. Right, the Rambam starts talking about Baal Averos, Rasha Baal Averos, you have to be mechabed them. If you see them be over Divrei Torah, so this is how you deal with them. The Shulchan Aruch just takes out the first part. The Shulchan Aruch in source number 4 just says, Ra Aviv Sha'avra al Divrei Torah. If you happen to see your father who's violating something in the Torah, it doesn't say who the father is, it doesn't say that the father is a Rasha and a Baal Averos, it just leaves that part out. Because the Shulchan Aruch agrees with the Rambam in his second claim, but not with his first claim. If the person who's being an over al Divrei Torah is a Rasha Baal Averos, so then presumably Rabbi Yosef Karo does not agree that you would be so sensitive to have the kibbutz and mora ava aim like you always do. We'll talk about how the Torah responds to this in source number 8, much like we just said. As a review, we'll do source number 8, and then we'll hopefully see how we can at least address the Rambam. Whether we'll actually answer for the Rambam, I don't know. Yeah, Aviva.
He seems to be making a distinction between the person of the father and the obligation of the child, almost regardless, in a way.
Why do you say that?
Well, because if these moms are...
Okay. I like to take out that first sentence and say that it's different from the second sentence. Yeah. Right? Afilu hu aviv rasho balaveros is a separate sentence. Right? So we'll get back to that. Maybe next week we can pick up on that. Yeah, Batya.
Well, I was also wondering about how this monster is allowed to curse and kid. I mean, I can definitely understand that. How you might be, not thrilled with your parent if you were put in such a situation, and that it might be okay to curse them or hit them. But then, how are you?
This I don't know the background Gemara for this statement from the Rambam. I don't recall it. My impression is it's a drasha from the pasuk, because klala and maka are specifically mentioned in the Torah by, I think it's in Kisavo, where you're not allowed to hit them. I have a feeling the Gemara makes a very specific drasha about what it's coming to exclude, and it's not one of those times where the Rambam's applying his logic and saying that this is how we understand the Isser. This is where the Torah says something. Chazal had a tradition of how to understand the pasuk, and that's what he's quoting here. I'm not really sure if it's really his. I don't think it's his own logic being applied here. So again, the second statement I think is independent of the first. That's my impression. Although I'd have to look into it, but that's what I feel based on how the Rambam says it. Yeah, Sarita. I think you're muted. I can just tell that you want to say something. You know, when you're on Zoom for 10 months.
If a child has obligation to multiple parents, say if they had a removed from a household and had an adoptive...
Oh, good, good, good. So this, you should know, I have a piece of paper on my bulletin board in my office, not this office, but at my office in Shul, which says two things on it from something we brought up in like the second class of Kibbutz Avim. It says, abusive parents, adoptive parents. That's all it says. Four words, abusive parents, adoptive parents. I am keeping those in my back pocket so that we can get back to them. That is a different situation, and it's not necessarily independent of what we're talking about, but it is sort of separate because that gets to who raises the child, who's nice to the child, stuff like that. So it could be related depending on the situation, but we will get to it later, hopefully. We're gonna have to dig deep for that one because that's gonna include other areas of halacha which are not germane or naturally included in Kibbutz Avim, but we'll talk about them. Yeah.
Yeah. And the other question was that is it universally accepted what a mamza is, because there are, you know, aren't there disputes as to, you know, mamza, is it only the product of an illicit relationship, or can it be however a child is conceived, or does it only to do with?
I mean, I'm not sure exactly what you're getting at. It sounds like you have something in mind, but the classic situation of a mamzer is when married parents who aren't married to each other have a child together. That's a classic situation. Might there also be sort of concoctions, you know, in terms of like surrogacy? This might come up in terms of how you should do that properly, and in terms of you know, IVF and stuff like that. Maybe people talk about it. I don't know if that's what you're talking about. But the classic situation, it's mostly about having two married parents cohabiting with each other when they're not married to each other. Yeah. But they are married to other people, right? Yeah, if two single people have a child, that's not created, that's not a momser. That's not what we're talking about. It's a different situation. It's not good. It's also usser, but it's not technically a momser, which has its whole a different slew of ramifications. Anyways, we can talk about that. Maybe that could be our next topic. No, I don't want that to be our next topic.
No. The adoptive thing is that it's very much a,
yeah, no, the adoptive stuff we'll definitely get to it. I think Rav Moshe has a famous tshuva about it, if I'm not mistaken. So we'll get to Emir Tashem in forever from now. Anyways, shkayach everyone, have a good night.
Good night.
And we'll pick it up next.